Dinner. He'll go onto his backhand with lots of loop. And Cerundolo ran round onto his forehand and played an off forehand right onto Sinner's baseline. And it was too much for the world number one.
Well, I can tell you that on the X platform, at least in France, the word Novak is trending. Can't think why.
No.
Raja says, I'm a tennis pro in Atlanta, Georgia, USA, about to work at the country club. Listening during my hour commute, you all are the best.
Well, thank you, Raja. Can we get a couple of free lessons if we come over?
I think you might need more than two.
I suspect so.
Julie says, although it's sad to see Sinner failing this way, I do appreciate that he stayed on the court and is trying to fight. He's not giving up, and it makes a tennis match worth listening to. It's a really good point. I think there are many, many, many players who, in different circumstances, might not still be on the court.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Sinner's now stepping in and hammering an off forehand return for a winner, and having finally managed to hold serve in the last game, maybe the first signs of a possible extraordinary twist in an extraordinary tale, because he's got a couple of chances here to get one of the breaks back at 4-1, 15-40. Cerundolo looks to go down the middle and misses. And Lady E, let's give her credit, did say that, of course, various strange thoughts will be going through Cerundolo's mind as he looks to close this out, but that will help him. That's a weak return in the circumstances from a pretty mediocre second serve.
You know, stranger things can happen, can't they? If you look at this fifth set almost in isolation as a match in and of itself, if Sinner started to feel better, could he find a way out of this? And the answer is absolutely yes. But the big question mark is whether he can start to feel better, whether he has enough time.
Well, I still don't think he can or he has, but he's just giving us a little bit of food for thought. Now, forehand to the backhand wing of Sinner, and of course he's got no power on that. The drop shot in return from Cerundolo, who then almost, well, he does apologise. I don't know why, whether he feels he had a little bit of good fortune in that particular rally, but he got Sinner into a mess on his backhand wing and played a very clever drop shot to capitalise upon that.
And again, Sinner using the racket to lean on. One hand just above the knee and the other one leaning on the racket as if it was a shooting stick.
So from 15-40 back to Juice. Backhand return now is deep to the backhand of Cerundolo, who takes the pace off the ball. Sinner goes cross court, so too does the Argentinian. Then a bit of a miss hit from Sinner. It goes long. And he's stumbling and staggering about behind his baseline.
I mean, he's a very young man, but he's walking like a much, much older man, isn't he?
He certainly is. And he's going to have horrendous memories of 2 5-setters played on this court. And Cerundolo serves to the forehand and he plays the drop shot again to Cerundolo. Sinner, he got to the ball, but he couldn't get it back over the net. Little chance there for Sinner to make things, well, if not interesting, then certainly more open with those two break points. Couldn't convert either, and now Cerundolo is just one game away from victory.
As I said, I think some of the physios here on site are going to have to treat some cases of whiplash as players and officials and tournament staff walk past the screen, look at the results and do a double take.
One of the best television commentators in the business. In fact, we had a couple of correspondents the other day saying he is the best. Robbie Koenig is listening to us at the moment, Lady E. And he's concurring. He knows, we all know, that Jannik Sinner is a goner. Cerundolo takes the first point of the seventh game of the fifth set. He's at 5-1, 15 love. A reminder, Sinner took the first two sets, 6-3, 6-2. He led 5-1 in the third. It was as straightforward, as routine as you could imagine. And then the conditions got to him and he has collapsed physically and in terms of the scoreline, and he's missed another forehand there. And he's just going through the paces here to get this done.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it, how many times that we don't know about a player is struggling at what appears to be the end of the match, and they do manage to serve it out, and we never find out that actually, had they been forced to play a couple of more games, they might have really struggled physically. Sinner will be thinking, if only I'd just closed it out. A handful of points. But that's tennis. That's the beauty of the tennis scoring systems.
Yeah, that's sport for you. Ifs, buts and maybes. Forehand now from Sinner cross-court. Bigger forehand from Cerundolo, who goes across onto his forehand. Again, takes the pace off the ball. Sinner winds himself up for one of those trademark forehands of his that is shoveled back into play, shall I say, from Cerundolo, who does the same thing again. He was just teeing off there on the forehand wing with Sinner, but as soon as he has to go onto his backhand side, he's got no strength. Mishits. Puts his hands on his hips again. And after 3 hours and 36 minutes, Juan Manuel Cerundolo of Argentina has match points against the world number one, Jannik Sinner, whose 30-match unbeaten run is about to come to an end. His first serve is in play. He's trying the drop shot with his plus one. Cerundolo's going to get there. He goes back across court. And Jannik Sinner is out. That is no mistake. Jannik Sinner is out of Roland Garros 2026, beaten from two sets up. We did wonder. There was a caveat at the start of the fortnight. The only way we perhaps thought that Jannik Sinner might not go all the way was if his body let him down in the searing heat. And that is precisely what has happened.
Well, we must give Jannik Sinner a great measure of credit for staying out there, because he seems to have felt absolutely awful. The body just letting him down here at Roland Garros. He'll be heartbroken about that. But well played, Cerundolo. Well played. You held it together. You didn't get distracted by worrying about what was going on with the world number one at the other end of the court. And that is an extraordinary win, an extraordinary day. And I don't think we need to start discussing which is the upset of the tournament, do you?
No. Well, we've had a few already. Obviously, Rybakina yesterday, Pegula to a lesser degree, but nothing's going to top this one.
It's an upset for the ages, isn't it? But as you said, it was always the question. It was always the kryptonite for Sinner. For all that he's achieved in best of three set matches, the question was always going to be, can his body survive tough, very, very hot conditions? And I'm afraid the answer was no.
Well, he's given a little wave to the crowd and he has walked somewhat forlornly off the court. He took his cap off as he left. He was scratching his head almost in bewilderment. But his run has come to an end. And as Eleanor was saying, the internet's going crazy with one word, Novak. Here now is his big, big chance. There's no Alcaraz. There's no Sinner. He will never get a better opportunity to win his 25th Grand Slam.
Well, I think the whole rest of the draw is perking up, to be honest. It's a merciless business, is top-level tennis, and every player will suddenly have seen that result and think, actually, I'm a contender here. And, you know, I think all bets are off now, aren't they? This is a very, very open tournament from here on in. And, well, I think as one of our listeners said, it was very sad to see Jannik Sinner suffering like that.
Juan Manuel,
but it's injected a lot of life into the tournament.
Fabrice Santoro.
Well, we're going to hear from the winner in the company of the magician, Fabrice Santoro.
Juan Manuel, congratulations. We know how much you admire and respect Jannik. I want to know, how did you handle with the situation? And I guess you want to say one word about Jannik.
Well, yes, hello to everyone. Of course, it's tough for him. He was leading the match. Like, I couldn't win more than three games by set. So I think I was a little bit lucky. I feel sorry for him because he deserved to win a lot of matches. And of course, he was deserving to win in this match. But then I don't know what happened. I think he was cramping maybe, or maybe the pressure. I don't know. But of course, I feel sorry for him and hope he recovers.
As an Argentinian player, Roland Garros is always the tournament. You are in the third one. You must be very happy to go through the tournament.
Yeah, of course, I'm super happy. I try to play my best. I'm going to keep trying to play my best. Of course, it's a tournament I really like to play because of the clay. It's my best surface, so I hope to be ready for the next match.
Last question, because I guess you need to recover for the next round. On court, Simon Mathieu, your brother is playing now against Hugo Gaston. Do you know the score?
No, I mean, you told me 2-1.
He's leading 2-1, and are you going to watch the end of the match?
Yeah, of course. I'm sorry for the French people, but I hope my brother wins. All the family is here also supporting, so I hope he wins.
We wish him the best, and once again, congratulations. Mesdames et messieurs, qualifiés pour le troisième tour, Juan Manuel Cerúndolo.
I think he can barely believe what's happened.
I think fair play to Cerúndolo for saying I was lucky. You know, it takes a good sporting competitor to stand up there and admit that in front of all these people, because it's a huge win for him. And as I said, I think he did very well not to get distracted by the situation, by the circumstances, by how confusing it was to see Jannik Sinner just really unable to move, unable to compete.
And just to remind you, he has become the first Argentinian to defeat a world number one since Del Potro against Nadal at the US Open in 2018, and the first Argentinian to manage that on clay since Cagliari against Juan Carlos Ferrero all the way back in 2003 at the Davis Cup, and only the fifth man to see off the number one seed here at Roland Garros prior to round three in the Open era, after Sergei Bruguera, who beat Stefan Edberg, Ramon Delgado, who defeated Pete Sampras, Dominic Hibati against Yevgeny Kafelnikov, and most recently, and this was 26 years ago, Karol Kuchera, who saw off Andre Agassi in the second round in 2000. We'll get more reaction to this, of course, and as and when Jannik Sinner goes into press, we'll record that and bring you the best bits of what he has to say. But we are going to move straight across from Philippe Chatrier to court Suzanne Longlin, where there is a quite magnificent atmosphere for a final set tiebreak between Adolfo Daniel Vallejo of Paraguay and the 17-year-old Frenchman Moise Kouami, who beat Marin Cilic a couple of days ago and who has battled back brilliantly in this one. He did take the first set by 6-3 and the second by 7-5, but then he started to falter. Vallejo won the third 6-3. He won the fourth 6-2. He was a breakup in the decider, but Kouami got it back and is now leading by 3 points to love in the tiebreakers. We join the action and watch the Frenchman cut the most brilliant return winner to go 4-0 in front.
Well, it's a day of drama, isn't it, today? Must be the designated day of drama at Roland Garros.
Just listen to the crowd.
Mercy.
Yeah, good luck trying to control this lot.
Please.
There's a real sense of irritation about this. Oh, for heaven's sake, shut up.
Well, she's been out there for nearly 4 hours.
Yes.
Probably telling them to be
nearly
quiet.
Nearly 5 hours.
5 hours, beg your pardon.
Yeah, 4 hours and 44 minutes this match has gone for. Vallejo, who's appearing in a Grand Slam main draw for the first time, can do nothing about the backhand return. Kouami raises his fist. The crowd goes crazy again. He's halfway to closing out this match tiebreak.
Well, we have to credit Simon Cambers, as painful as that is, because Simon did say that Kouami was going to be one to watch.
Well, Simon says so many things that every now and then he's got to get something right. Five love. Kouami serves to the backhand. The return is right onto the baseline. There's a bit of a miss hit from Kouami, who's now going to go back down the line with a big forehand. The slice is deep and good from Vallejo, who then changes the angle again. So it's forehand to forehand. Big forehand from Vallejo. Up goes a high defensive lob from Kouami. It bounces just over the net, but Vallejo is there to put away a simple winner and get on the board in this match tiebreak.
Kwame. Well, 5-1 feels like a big lead, but you have to remember this is a match tiebreak. It's first to 10. There is plenty of time for twists and turns. Well, Kwame, understandably, he's taking on some energy gels as he passes by his bag. When you're playing for 4 hours and 45 odd minutes, well, you do need to manage your resources.
Well, at 17 years and 2 months, Kwame is attempting to become the fifth youngest man to reach the third round at Roland Garros in the Open era, and the youngest to get to a Grand Slam third round since Rafael Nadal at Wimbledon in 2003. Pacheco's got his own motivation. He's attempting to become the first Paraguayan man to reach a Grand Slam third round since Delgado, who we keep referring to at the US Open back in 2002. Here's Kwame at 5-1, serving to the forehand. And now going back to the forehand wing of his Paraguayan opponent. Now he goes across court. Ball down the middle of the court from the Paraguayan, who then slices his backhand into the net.
Fifth on Kwame.
Must be so, so difficult to play when your opponent's every winner is just greeted with that sort of noise and the chorus of singing going around this court.
Oh, this is spine-tingling stuff. It really is. To watch a young man doing this in front of his adoring public, well, it doesn't get much better. 1-6. Pacheco trying to block out the noise. Just focus on hauling himself back. First to 10, of course, so there's still an opportunity for him to set off the alarm bells in French camps. But he's missed his first serve. Second serve is to the forehand. He takes to return quickly, but he couldn't control that one.
Well, he was about 2 feet inside the baseline there when he hit that return. He's trying to go on the aggressive, on the offensive, and it's proved to be very effective so far in this match tiebreak.
Some good names, by the way. I mentioned that Kwame is attempting to become the fifth youngest man to reach the third round here in the Open era. I'll give you the other four in just a moment, as that return is into the sidelines from Kwame, the youngest of all, Lady E. Michael Chang in 1988, he was 16 years and 3 months when he got to round three before losing to John McEnroe. Kent Carlson, 16 years and 4 months when he lost to Andres Gomez in the third round in 1984. John Alexander, 16 years and 10 months back in 1968. He lost to Carmichael in round three as an off forehand from Kwame leads to a drop shot from the Paraguayan. Drop shotted back by Kwame, but then a really good pass across court from Pacheco, and although Kwame was able to get to the ball, he left the court open and the Paraguayan comfortably placed his volley into it.
Kwame.
And all of a sudden at 6-4, it's a rather different kettle of fish.
Well, I love a match tiebreaker. I think it's a match within a match, and I think it's the thing I love about it is that there's always time to find a way back. You go one or two mini breaks down in a normal tiebreaker and really you're done for.
6-4, that's a good first serve, but the return is blocked back into play by Pacheco. And now, well, it's a drop shot of sorts, but Pacheco was able to get to that. Cross court from Kwame, read at the net by Pacheco. A little touch volley gives him another point.
And
it's 6-5. Just to finish off those names very quickly, the youngest men to reach the third round at Roland Garros in the Open era, and I hope I haven't just jinxed him completely by banging on about this, but Bjorn Borg was 16 years and 11 months in 1973 when he got to the fourth round. He lost to Panatta. And Chang again, Michael Chang, this is the man that Kwame will replace in fifth position if he wins today. He was 17 years and 3 months in 1989 when he lost to the champion, Stefan Edberg. Pacheco back on serve in this match tiebreak of 5-6. Methodically bounces the balls. Looks up, serves to the forehand. It's a lofted return that is well struck by Vallejo. He's on his backhand cross court to the double hander of Kouame, who nets. And they will change ends all square at 6 points apiece.
Well, they're not singing anymore. In fact, there's a sort of murmur of disquiet going around this court, Suzanne Longlin.
Radio Roland Garros. Radio Roland Garros will be with you from 11 local time, broadcasting live from Paris, bringing you ball-by-ball commentary, exclusive interviews, and all the very latest news.
Radio Roland Garros.
Listen again, replay.
The nerves are jangling. Kouame just walking back to the baseline. He needs to shut all of those things out. The good and the bad. The audible tension in the air is not going to help him. This is a bit better from the crowd. They're just trying to rouse him a little bit. Because the French tennis legend, now retired, Richard Gasquet, is among those in the box for Kouame, cheering him on. So he's got plenty of experience to draw on in preparing for these matches.
Vallejo is 22 years of age. He's currently at 71 in the world. That's just one of his best ranking. Comes from Asunción in Paraguay. Both men playing their first ever five-setter. That first serve clips the top of the tape and bounces long. Kouame, currently ranked at 318.
And rising.
Yes.
And will rise.
He will rise. But will he rise to the challenge here, Lady E? Let's see. Backhand cross court into the backhand corner of the Paraguay, and the drop shot from Kwame's not a good one. Oh, but he read the pass as it went back across court. He couldn't, though, shovel up, spit out, deal with the half volley he was presented with. It's another point to Vallejo. I think that's six in a row.
Yeah, and for the first time, Vallejo is ahead in the scoreline in this match tiebreak.
Good serve out wide, and the return cross court is wide. So, after a succession of points against the French fans and their favourite, it's back to seven apiece. Just to reiterate a point I made earlier, Vallejo is making both his Roland Garros and indeed Grand Slam main draw debuts this week after losing in qualifying in 2025. And also in 2026 at the Australian Open in the third round of qualifying. So huge opportunities for both men here as Kouame serves an absolute bullet down the middle. Clean ace.
Kouame.
222 kilometres, but it felt faster, didn't it? It felt emphatic. Felt like a statement.
Wow. I mean, 220Ks. That's approaching 150 miles an hour. What a time to find one of your best serves ever, might I suggest. Takes him potentially within 2 points of victory, but it's back to Vallejo on serve at 7-8. 4 hours and 54 minutes on the clock. Vallejo serving to the forehand, returns down the middle of the court, off forehand from Vallejo. Now he's going to play his double-hander, shortish ball, similar shot from Kouame, who got good depth with his backhand. He's getting good depth again there, so he's in charge. Plays a big forehand, defending work from Vallejo, which is good, and then Kouame tries to go across court with his double hander, and he puts it wide. And he was on top in that point.
I think it was the wrong choice of shot, which is probably why he missed it. Trying to pin Vallejo into that corner, and he just overplayed his hand.
By the way, it's getting better and better for the Cerúndolo family. The younger brother's seen off the world number one, and Francisco is now 5-1 up in the fourth against Hugo Gaston of France on court Simon Macho, leading by 2-1. Here's Vallejo, 8 points all now on court Suzanne Longlin. All eyes trained on the Paraguayan as he throws the ball up and serves out wide, looking for the ace to the forehand wing of the French right-hander not quite finding the mark. The fans are fluttering all around Suzanne Longlin. It's a boiler again, as it has been for every day of these championships. And it's a thriller again, as it has been for most of the week too. The plus one's a good one from Vallejo, but then there's a really good forehand. I'm not quite sure how he managed to manufacture so much power as he was facing away from the net. But Kwame turned, he spun, he whipped his forehand across court. It was good enough for the point, and now Eleanor is standing there. He's putting his hand up to his ear. He's enjoying the cheers. He's showing he's got the mentality, and he's reached match point.
Cold as ice. In the hottest possible atmosphere in every sense, but goodness me, Kwame looking like the calmest man in the place.
Oh, he's calmer than me. Match point on his serve to the backhand. Cross court, he's serving, volleying. Is he going to get it? No, he's not! He's flat on his back. The crowd's gone mad. There's a new superstar in town. He's 17 years and 2 months. His name's Moise Kwame. And he's just beaten Adolfo Daniel Vallejo of Paraguay in front of a frenzied Suzanne Longlin crowd. He's won it 6-3, 7-5, 3-6, 2-6, 10-7. 10-8 in a match tiebreak. Let's get the facts right. Let's enjoy the celebrations. Eleanor Preston.
Well, an incredible moment of coolness from Kwame in that pulsating match tiebreak, and the maturity beyond his 17 years. Quite incredible. It's a febrile atmosphere. Yes, you get the support as a French player, but when you don't capitalise on your leads, you could feel the crowd getting a little bit nervous. As Vallejo just fought back in that tiebreaker, Kwame held his nerve, held firm, and he looks exhausted but utterly delighted. He's got his head in his hands. He's certainly been milking the applause, and now he's going back to just try and cool down a bit, take a few deep breaths. I think we could all deal with a few deep breaths after the last 20 minutes or so. We've seen the world number one, Jannik Sinner, go out of the tournament. And yes, you did hear me right. He went out in five sets, very much impaired by his physical condition. He was really struggling in the heat. But if you've just joined us, that is the story of the day. But from a French perspective, it might have been eclipsed by Kwame winning this match.
Well, it's a tough one for Vallejo, who's leaving the court to a round of applause. Kwame basically tried to get inside the freezer just now.
Well, you can't blame him, can you?
He was effectively reaching for a bottle of water that was at the back of it, but honestly, three quarters of his body was inside it, and now he's back on his chair, the biggest smile on his face. And we'll hear from him in just a moment, but listen to the noise. We do keep making mention of the fact that it's 43 years since a Frenchman won Roland Garros. Only one Frenchman's managed that since 1946. It was Yannick Noah. I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that Moise Kwame is about to follow in his footsteps, but goodness me, he's taken a giant march forward in terms of profile and possibilities. He's now hugging some of his close-knit friends who are in the front row. Sheer unbridled Parisian joy.
Oh. He's a popular young man, isn't he?
He most certainly is. We are going to hear from him. Julien Beneteau is going to talk to the toast of the town.
Moïse, quel match, près de 5 heures d'une bataille incroyable, avec un public en fusion. Comment tu peux décrire ce que tu as vécu aujourd'hui? Prends ton temps.
Just going to be a slight pause because he's asked one of the ball boys to bring him some water. He's drunk a bit of it and he's throwing the rest of it over his head. Tough to find the composure to say anything significant after you've been involved in a battle like that in front of a crowd like this.
Well, and we saw this, didn't we, with Mencic yesterday. When you win the match, sometimes that's when your body really breaks down because you can almost let go. And I think Kouame only now starting to feel the exhaustion as well as the excitement, of course.
Oubliez la question. Alors, je disais,
what's the question repeated?
Quel match? Près de 5 heures d'une bataille incroyable. C'est la première fois que tu joues en 5-7 ici à Roland-Garros, sur ce cours Suzanne Lenglen. Et décris-nous ce que tu as vécu avec ce public incroyable qui t'a poussé jusqu'au bout.
Les gars, j'ai juste un mot à dire. Merci. Elle vous revient cette victoire. Elle vous revient cette victoire.
Julien just pointing out his first 5-set, first time on court Suzanne Lenglen. Plenty of challenges, and he's overcome
them
all.
Merci, parce que, franchement, très honnêtement, sans vous, j'aurais jamais gagné ce match. Jamais.
He says it's all down to the crowd. They certainly played their part. But so did you, young man.
Je pense que vous vous rendez même pas compte à quel point vous m'avez porté, les gars. Je pense que physiquement, vous êtes encore plus mort que moi. À force de crier, à force de donner toute votre vie pour moi, pour ce match. Et les gars, merci parce que ça a fonctionné. Merci!
Oh, further thanks to the crowd. He's saying you don't realize just how much you helped me out there with your cheers. He's a very mature young man.
Tu es évidemment passé par toutes les émotions dans ce match, mais à la fin, ce qui est le plus marquant, c'est le courage et la justesse, et j'ai envie de dire l'expérience malgré tes 17 ans dont tu as fait preuve pour aller chercher ce match. Est-ce que c'est pas que l'aide du public? Comment tu as fait pour aller justement chercher ce match?
Just asking how he dealt with all the challenges, how he was able to maintain his maturity and concentration in 5 hours of heat.
Et ce qu'il a dit quand il était face à ces trois balles de match, j'ai jamais cessé d'y croire. Et aujourd'hui, quand je me suis retrouvé à 5-3, break, dans le cinquième, j'ai jamais cessé d'y croire. Mais ça, c'est encore une fois grâce à vous. Vraiment, jamais cessé d'y croire.
Just saying there how much he learned from watching last year's final and the way that Alcaraz, of course, came back from two sets down against Sinner.
Dernière question. Te voici au troisième tour pour la première fois de ta jeune carrière. Comment tu vas justement mettre à profit les jours, le jour et demi de repos que tu vas avoir pour être prêt pour ce troisième tour?
So, how's he going to prepare for the next one? Thanks, Julian. I've only just finished this one after 5 hours.
And I'm using the microphone to hold me up.
Merci, les gars.
Qualifié pour le troisième tour, le Français Moïse.
That is brilliant.
Talk about taking control of the situation. Kouame just thinking, I've had enough. I'm going to find a funny way out of this.
The sport has a new superstar, and his name's Moïse Kouame. Congratulations, through by 10 points to 8 in a fifth set tiebreak against Adolfo Daniel Vallejo of Paraguay after 4 hours and 56 minutes. He goes through to play Alejandro Tobillo, who had a rather more comfortable route through to round 3 because he got a walkover at the expense of Valentin Vachero. So, you know, that just adds to the challenge. But he's a young man, he's 17. He's not going to worry about that just yet. What an experience, Lady E.
And a huge experience, but also to come through a 4-hour, 45, 46 minute match in these conditions when you are 17. It usually takes several years for players' bodies to mature to the point where they can handle very long matches. And you don't normally win your first 5-setter. You normally have to gain that experience, get the miles in the legs that comes from playing week in, week out at the very top of the ATP Tour. And yet this young man managed it seemingly with energy to spare. So that in itself is a fantastic achievement. let alone handling the excitement, handling the energy, handling the post-match interview. Fantastic job from Kwame, and I agree with you, this young man is a star.
Just love the way that he dealt with that last question. Perfectly fair question, but he didn't have an answer, and the way he didn't answer it was brilliant. Right, well, goodness me, I could do with a lie down as well.
I think we all could, and I think it's fairly safe to bet that somewhere Yannick Sinner is having a lie down.
Yes.
And several other forms of treatment, I'm sure. I wonder, there's an amazing medical team here, the facilities on hand for players. I don't think we can stress this enough. I know we've talked a lot about the conditions and how tough it is and how lots of players are struggling, but they are getting incredible care behind the scenes.
And you'll know this because you've worked behind the scenes on many occasions at Wimbledon in particular. How do you set about asking Yannick Sinner when he wants to give an interview after a defeat like that?
Well, it will be done by actually Nicola Arzani, who works for the ATP Tour and is incredibly experienced, also Italian, so has known Yannick Sinner for many, many years. And Nicola, I think, will use his judgment about how Sinner is feeling, perhaps talk to his team, because players are exempt on medical grounds if they're really unable to attend the press conference. And in that situation, what they'll do is they'll get a quote from Sinner, which they can then release to the media so that those on deadline have something from him, just talking about what happened, what was going on in his body. So, I mean, ideally, he will be feeling well enough to come to media at some point. The rule is that normally you should come within the hour, but in these circumstances, I'm sure that will be relaxed if needed for Yannick Sinner. But it really depends on his physical situation. Certainly he won't, that will be the priority. How well is he? How much is he able to do and when?
Well, if you are just joining our coverage, where have you been? We're live from 11 a.m. every morning until the close of play. I'm Marcus Buckland in the company of Lady Eleanor of Preston. Yannick Sinner has gone out. He was leading by two sets and he was 5-1 up in the third against Juan Manuel Cerúndolo when, his body just shut down effectively and he was unable to get back on his feet. So he has gone out at the moment on Philippe Chatrier, where it's a little calmer. Everyone's just collecting their thoughts and a lot of them have gone outside to have a drink and all the rest of it. But there is a Frenchwoman in action, Diane Parry, who battled back really well from a couple of days ago when she lost the opening set of her first round match by 6 games to love, but 1-3. And now she's up against Anne Lee of the United States, who is seeded at 30, and they're level at 1-all in the first set. Parry's at love 30 on her serve, and we'll focus on that in just a moment. Elsewhere, on court, Simon Mathieu, Felix Auger-Aliassime, and Roman Andres Burruchaga will start shortly. Auger-Aliassime, who had a rare old battle a couple of nights ago. Has anybody not had a rare old battle one way or another in the first 3 or 4 days? Well, he's going to play what could be another thrilling encounter. Court 14, Hubie Herkacz is playing Francis Tiafoe of the United States, who's the 19th seed. Herkacz won the first set in a tiebreak. Tiafoe won the second in a tiebreak. He won the third by 6-4, and he's a break up in the fourth as well. So it's starting to look, after 3 hours and 20 minutes, as if Tiafoe's going to come through that. Claire Liu and Maria Sakkari are involved in a very tight first set on court 7. It's on serve. They're sitting down in a moment. Liu of the United States will serve to stay in the first set at 5-6. On court 6, Anna Kalinskaya is playing Alina Korneva, and they are into a first set tiebreak. And Kalinskaya, who's the number 22 seed, is leading that by 4-1. There's lots of doubles. And of course, you can get all the latest scores, all the stories, the interviews, the draws, everything you need on the website, which Lady E is always promoting. Daria Kazakina is 4-1 down to Susan Bandici of Switzerland on court 12. And Camila Osorio of Colombia took the first set against Yulia Putintseva of Kazakhstan by 7-5. Putintseva serving to stay in the match at 5-6, 30-15. But the website's a great way, of course, to keep up to speed with everything that's happening. There's some quite well-written articles,
Very well-written articles, and also lots of articles that take you sort of behind the curtain, if you like, and talk about some of the things, innovations that have happened this year at Roland Garros, as well as obviously lots of information about all your favourite players. The app, of course, is also excellent. So if you're listening to us through the website, check out the app, because it's really good. And if you're listening to us through the app, check out the website. It's really good.
Everything's really good.
Jack says, is this Rude's best chance for a slam?
Good question.
Well, as I said, I think everyone in the draw is going to, you know, they'll be concerned for Yannick Sinner's personal welfare, but they will perk up at the thought that he's no longer in the tournament. There's no question about that. Izzy Brizzy said, I loved the calling of the Vallejo-Kouame match. It gave me chill bumps.
Oh.
So Simon, actually, our own Simon Cambers, has written a post on X. He was commentating with Sophie for the early stages of that Yannick Sinner match, and he's just said, I was commentating for Radio Roland Garros for much of it. The only signs that things were not quite right early in the third was that Sinner was slicing more backhands than normal. Then when he gave away Cerundolo's service games at 5-3, he thought he could serve it out, but he couldn't.
Mm.
Well, he certainly couldn't. And things really went downhill for Sinner from then on, and really physically struggling out there. And it was sad to see. We wish him, obviously, all the best in his recovery. The good news about heat-related conditions is usually players recover relatively quickly. They can rehydrate and cool down, and he'll be feeling better. He'll be feeling heartbroken about his defeat today, but he'll be feeling better.
Of course, everyone's going to get very excited. All Novak Djokovic fans are now going to get very excited about the prospects of him winning that elusive 25th Grand Slam. But backhand Bobby has been back in touch and says, I think we need to wait to see how Djokovic gets on against Fonseca first, as the latter is supposed to be the next best thing. He came from two sets down yesterday, Fonseca. And of course, he gets brilliant support from the very exuberant, excited Brazilian fans. And, you know, if we get a big, high-profile match between Brazil and France here, well, I mean, any roof will blow off. It'll be absolutely incredible. And Bobby says if Novak dispatches him, then he's definitely in the mix. He goes on to say, with regards to the other contenders, Zverev wants it too much. I think Sinner going out will actually be counterproductive for him because he'll be expecting to win the title. Other players will know that too, and it will make him more mentally vulnerable in his matches. And Bobby rounds things off by saying, I said that Casper, the friendly forehand at the start of the fortnight, was my man, and I'm sticking with him.
It's a very good point about Fonseca. That is looming in the draw for Djokovic. But I think Djokovic is fighting his own battle with his body as well. You know, coming in here at 39 years old with very few matches under his belt. For Djokovic, it's about getting through the first week. And once he gets through the first week, we'll see. Then he'll start to really mount his campaign for the title, I think. But, Brian is asking, how many people do we think are now genuine contenders? How many people are in the mix to win the title now? I think, well, Casper Ruud, who we've talked about. Alexander Zverev, of course. He's come so close to winning a Grand Slam before. He plays very, very well on this surface. He's incredibly consistent on this surface and around the world. So, as second seed, he will fancy his chances. I mean, could we see someone break through? One of the younger players, a Fonseca, even a Kouame. You know, everybody is going to feel as though it's an open draw now.
Yeah. And, you know, listen, it could be very easy for us to all sound incredibly insensitive towards Yannick Sinner, who was brave the way he battled through to the end. I mean, these are very, very tough conditions. We know he can be a little frail in those circumstances. He did what he could. But just from a purely neutral point of view, it does add so much more intrigue to the men's side of the draw. A couple of other interesting points that are being raised by a lot of people. First of all, Lady Eve, if over the years the heat continues to be like this, is there more of a chance that the authorities will decide to get rid of best of five set matches for the men, at least in the early stages, to try and preserve a little bit more freshness? And Emily in Harrisburg in Pennsylvania also says, hello, lovely duo. A question my family is considering, given Sinner's struggles today. Has there been any discussion about scheduling matches in the early morning and the evening to avoid the hottest hours of the day. I know ticket sales are probably the reason this hasn't happened yet, but it feels that something needs to change.
Well, I would point out that this weather is kind of anomalous for Roland Garros. You know,
but very,
It could become the norm. But I think they will consider anything that helps player welfare, because I think player welfare will always be the priority, and also the health and well-being of spectators. I don't think this is a situation that anyone here at Roland Garros or any of the other Grand Slams takes lightly. And it will be considered and thought about, but it's, you know, there's not a lot of flexibility built into the system of running Grand Slams. They've run the same way for an awfully long time. And there are lots of impacts of going, for example, from five sets to three sets. Not least, I think, you know, there are traditions to protect, and that will be a consideration, and certainly tradition is never going to trump player welfare. We have roofs here as well. You know, do you consider playing sometimes under the roof? But then that changes the dynamic of the tournament.
And would also be very unfair for all the players who are not on a court with a roof.
Yes, I mean, we do have a heat rule here. It actually hasn't been used very much this year, as much as we've talked about the conditions and how tough it is. But at the Australian Open, for example, it's not that uncommon for there to be no play on the outside courts until the heat drops. And it's not just the heat, it's not just the temperature as you see on your weather app, it's also the ambient temperature as well, which is taken into account, how warm the air actually is, humidity and all those different factors. But it's not uncommon at the Australian Open, for example, to see no play on the outside courts and only play under the roofs with the air conditioning. I mean, you generally have enough time, depending on where you are in the draw, to be able to do that and still catch up. So there are lots of options. I'm sure they'll be discussed. You know, I think no one is under any illusions about the fact that potentially this could be the future, unfortunately. And it's one of the reasons why all these tournaments, this one included, places such a high value on sustainability and making itself a sustainable tournament to try and offset that as best it can.
Well, it's going to be interesting as the world changes, as weather patterns change. Of course, the authorities have got to keep up to speed. The irony is that next week, looking at the forecast, it's going to be so much cooler. We're going to have a lot of rain as well. So we go from one extreme almost to another, don't we?
Yeah, but I mean, you and I know that quite often we've come here and it's been cold and wet. I mean, it was 10, 12, 13 degrees in qualifying week here. So this is a very unfortunate turn of events. And this weather pattern, unfortunately, has chosen to be stuck over Paris at this time. And it's not helping the players. I mean, it's adding some intrigue to the tournament, that's for sure. Mm. As we've said, it has a big impact in terms of how the courts play, and a lot of players have been saying that the ball flies around a lot more when it's hot like this, but it certainly hasn't helped Jannik Sinner. Vishal says, I used to believe that Sinner could beat even the best AI version of a tennis player, but I've realised now that he's human after all. Huge disappointment considering he was 5-1 up in the third set. I mean, an enormous disappointment for Sinner. You know, arguably as disappointing as his loss in the final here last year, because at least that was a final.
Yeah.
And a final for the ages against, you know, his huge rival, who he then went on to best at Wimbledon.
And as brilliant as he's been at Masters level, and he's won the last six, and he was on a 29-match unbeaten streak, of course, it's now two of the slams that will have passed him by this year, having lost in the semi-finals in Australia, having gone out in the second round here. So we will see what comes next. Just in terms of the weather forecast over the next few days, it's peaked at around 32 today. Same tomorrow, but no sun. It's just a cloudy, hot day. Mixture of sun and cloud. This is according to my app, which is not always entirely accurate, but 31 on Saturday, and then it changes. And in fact, Lady E, maybe you were right. I think a few days ago I chastised you for suggesting the weather was going to get worse, or at least cooler from Sunday, but that's now what they're saying. You know too much.
I know as much as anyone else looking at a weather app.
Well, it's down to 22 degrees on Sunday with a 35% chance of rain. 24 degrees Monday. It's cloudy. 21 on Tuesday. 60% chance of rain. 19 degrees only on Wednesday. Almost half the warmth. warmth, 50% chance of rain, 19 on Thursday with 55% chance of rain, 19 on Friday with a 50% chance of rain, 20 on Saturday with a 55% chance of rain.
Yes, and I mean, the apps are all going to vary somewhat in temperatures, but it's certainly going to be a lot cooler, and that's going to have a bearing on conditions. These courts could play completely differently this time next week. They'll be much slower, the ball will be a little more dead, it won't be flying around so much. It's going to be, two tournaments in one.
But Austin has made a lot of very good points today, comes back and reiterates what we have roughly been saying. Probably no one wants to hear this, but climate change is going to make these conditions the norm for all Grand Slams moving forward. Tennis will need to adapt. The US Open will probably be even worse in terms.
Radio Roland Garros. Radio Roland Garros will be with you from 11 local time, broadcasting live from Paris, bringing you ball-by-ball commentary, exclusive interviews, and all the very latest news.
Radio Roland Garros.
Listen again, replay.
Of conditions than what the players are dealing with this week.
Well, as we said, the US Open, at that time of year in New York, end of August, beginning of September, it can be incredibly humid, which obviously is a different challenge in terms of dealing with the heat. The heat we've had here so far in Paris has been very dry heat, but there's just not a breath of wind, which can happen in Paris when there is a heat wave. It's very still, and that makes it very difficult to escape the heat anywhere. Rose says Richard Gasquet will do with Moise Kouame what Juan Carlos Ferrero did with Carlos Alcaraz in terms of coaching him.
Oh, I see.
An ex-player who goes on to coach someone with great success. Joshua says, I've turned off. Weather this, weather that. Get on with the tennis. Well, Joshua, I'm afraid you've turned off, so I can't yes. really respond to your message, but thanks awfully.
I mean, it is a story, Josh, so hopefully you'll come back to us. John from Wolverhampton. Wants to know if this is one of the greatest collapses in the history of tennis.
In terms of within a match?
Yeah, I think it probably is.
Well, any time a player loses from two sets up, it's a collapse. Sometimes it's mental, sometimes it's physical, sometimes the other player just ups their game. You know, you can have a player who makes a very slow start and then finds their feet.
I want to get Joshua back listening to us. Come on, you didn't really turn us off, Joshua Worrell, did you? We'll talk about some tennis now and prove me right. Just text back, say, I was only kidding. We don't want to lose you, Joshua.
Don't be so needy.
I mean,
let Joshua go.
I'm a people pleaser. I don't want Joshua to go. Don't want any of you to go, ever. You've got to listen to us from 11 o'clock every morning through until, the close of play. And you can get in touch on the X platform.
At radio_RG, or you can email us frenchopenradio@fft.fr.
Right, let's, in the vain hope that Joshua is still listening, get back to the tennis. Here on court, Philippe Chatrier and Lee of the United States is playing Bianne Parry. They've had a break apiece. It's back on serve at the moment. Lee is, though, facing a break point at 2-3, 30-40. So we've had great drama with the French man on Suzanne Lenglen. Not going to have quite the same atmosphere for the foreseeable future, at least here on Chatrier, but Dianne Parry's doing her bit at the moment, Lady E.
Yeah, she is, the second time in a row that she's been on court, Philippe Chatrier. And as you said, not a full court by any means. People just taking a break after that long Cirundolo-Sinner match to rehydrate and perhaps spend some time in the shade if they can. But you would think that as this match goes on, more and more people will come and join when they realise a French woman is playing.
Yeah, I mean, the schedule's interesting as well today as Lee comes in and hammers away an inside-in forehand winner. And that saves a break point opportunity. Just to update you on the match on court 14, where Francis Tiafoe looked to be in a very good position against Tubi Hercatch in the fourth, said he was a break-up. Hercatch has broken back, so it's now 5-5. Hercatch is serving at deuce. He is trailing by 2-1. Judith Graber of Austria has just started against Amanda Anisimova on court Suzanne Longlen. Maria Sakkari and Claire Liu are level at 6 points all in a first set tiebreak. Anna Kalinskaya won the first set against Alina Korneva in a tiebreak by 7-2. It's one all in the second. Lots of doubles matches. Do go to the website for all the latest scores. But in terms of the other singles encounters, Derek Azakina on serve at 4-5, but facing a set point, 4-5, 30-40 against Susan Bandici of Switzerland. And Yulia Putintseva has hit back against Camila Osorio of Colombia on court 13. Osorio winning the first set 7-5. Putintseva has just won the second by 8-6 in a tiebreak. And the other match of interest is on court 9. Now that's Vic Capriva against Martin. And you very kindly gave me the phonetical pronunciation of this. Landelus, thank you very much, who was a very good junior. I saw his name an awful lot 2 or 3 years ago. Now, the winner of that is going to play Cerúndolo. They're going to be the big beneficiary of the fact that Sinner has gone out. Well, Capriva was looking good. He won the first two sets for the loss of just 3 games. Landelus has won the third set, though, by 6-4. They are in the early stages of the fourth as the Empress arrives at the back of the commentary booth and then immediately goes and blocks off the fan.
Well, she only wants us for the air conditioning.
Yeah, she does.
I have to say that as I was walking in earlier today, I did stop by that court 14 match between Tiafoe and Hurkacz. It was absolutely packed out there. There's not a seat to be had. And then what happens with that court is it's on the far side of Suzanne Longlen from us. And people gather around the edges, almost in the corridors. So there was lots and lots of interest around that one.
Do you know something, Lady E? Joshua hasn't got back to us. I think he has gone.
I think you need to let Joshua go.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Do you think he'll come back?
Might not.
Gosh, you're quite sort of
blasé about the loss of Joshua. Well, because I know that we have many, many listeners who really like the balance of discussion that we have here on Radio Roland Garros, and I'm more worried about them. I'm more concerned about them.
And Rose Richards, for some reason, is questioning me when I mention that I can see into the future. Well, Rose, I knew you were going to write that email to us. It's just a fact. Sometimes.
Is it a fact? How are we defining fact there?
Yeah, it's actual nonsense. I'm sorry, Rose, but I can't even remember why I said it now. It's such a hot afternoon. You say things that you don't mean to say. I mean, to be honest, that's been the story of my career for the last 35 years.
Becky says, dear team, I think it got slightly lost in the big Sinner news, but qualifier Chalinska beat Mertens, who seeded. Well, thank you for flagging that, Becky.
And thank you, Austin, for saying that you'll be with us all day. We can rely on Austin.
Well, I appreciate you, Austin.
We're actually only going to be here for another 25 minutes or so. Are you then done for the day, Lady E? Oh no, you're back for the night match, aren't you?
I am back for the night session with the Empress.
Ah, well, she's very early for the night session.
She is nothing if not conscientious.
I mean, I guess she's going to start her 3.5 hours of prep.
Well, she might do. Or she's coming to keep an eye on you to make sure you behave, which is much more likely.
Do you know, I saw some of her prep yesterday, Lady E, because she was working in the booth next door, and it consisted of Sasha Zverev and Mahac, the two names, and then she went, and that was it. But at least she knew who was playing.
She has staff.
Right. Dean Perry's in a spot of bother here at 3-all and 15-40. A rather sparse court, Philippe Chatrier, at the moment. Perry's got her back to us. She's facing the presidential tribune, and her first serve clips the top of the tape and goes long. We will move away quickly from here, though, because Jannik Sinner is poised to tell us his thoughts after losing in 5 sets to Juan Manuel Cerúndolo.
Usually in Grand Slams, you always have a couple of days where you don't feel perfect. This was today. This happened.
How would you compare this to previous instances where you've had trouble on the court, like in Shanghai or in Australia in January? Was this similar to that? There's tough conditions today. I know you said not crazy warm, but tough. So I'm just curious if
yeah,
it was
I think look, Shanghai was very tough, with humidity very high. Australia was very, very warm. I do remember, and it's different when you play on a hard court because the heat comes also underneath. And here was, I mean, it was warm, but it was okay. You know, it was not like I was dying because of the heat. I think today was completely different scenario. You know, but again, you know, this can happen. It's tough to accept, of course, because of the position where I've been in and everything cons-